This is XTP Media.
So it takes some self-reflection and some time to kind of gain confidence in that environment and figure out what you're going to stand your ground on, what, you know, how to fit in the culture, but not, you know, undermine the fact that you are a woman. I wouldn't say difficult at first, but it was something I had to learn.
This is Extended.
Takeoff. So, here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 101 of Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Today, I'm joined by Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society, and Tim is, of course, Editor-in-Chief of Aerospace Magazine. Tim, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Hello, everybody.
And Gareth Stringer, he is the Editor, of course, at Global Aviation Resource. Gareth, how are you today?
Very good, thanks, Peter. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks, and we're recording this on a video call today, so not great for radio, but Gareth is trying to make me laugh, so I'm sure we'll have a few outtakes, no doubt, at the end.
Put your clothes back on, Gareth.
In this episode, we got a really special guest who really demonstrates how commitment and dedication can get you to the absolute top of your profession. But first, we want to say a big thank you to our listeners and supporters after we aired episode 100. We're really humbled by all the lovely comments. I want to focus on one piece of feedback, and that's from Neil Braden. Neil was there right at the start, and in fact, he went right back into our Airplane Geeks features. And he sent us an email, won't read it all, but he said, "Hello, Extended, congratulations on reaching 100 episodes. Great achievement and happy to say I was there from day one." Goes on to talk about his favourite episode, which actually was episode 91, and that was Mike Hassara's episode, Gareth, on the KC-135. I thought it was interesting.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so maybe we'll give Mike that feedback. And He goes on to say, "Whether it's from one of your great guests or promoting aerospace section, I always feel like I learn something from every episode." So thanks very much, Neil. But what Neil doesn't know, or he may not know, is that he's behind us producing the Women in Aviation features. Neil mentioned to me a while ago, a good few years ago, that he had a teenage daughter who occasionally listens to the show. And it really made me think if we're doing enough to promote role models to Neil's daughter. Now, once we started, we found such amazing guests. We thought their content would speak for themselves. So although released with the hashtag Women in Aviation, these guests are role models regardless of their gender. So thanks very much, Neil, for getting us on this journey. So, Gareth, can I hand over to you to introduce today's guest?
Yeah, it is a perfect segue, isn't it, Peter? Because our guest today is Major Michelle Curran of the United States Air Force. She is Thunderbird number 5 in the United States Air Force Thunderbird demonstration team. And I knew that Mace, for that is her call sign, was in the Thunderbird. She was going into her second and final season, but was actually inspired to contact her by a suggestion that came up from YouTube, a video to watch, and it was of the Kelly Clarkson show in the United States, and it basically centered around a small girl whose name's Amelia, believe it or not, and she, this little girl, is a massive Thunderbirds fan, wants to be a pilot, and her hero is Michelle Curran. So this little girl was on the show, and I'm going to put the link in the show notes. You have to watch it. But unbeknownst to her, Michelle Curran is on the show and comes to meet her and then takes her to Nellis Air Force Base, and she gets to spend a day with the Thunderbirds. But Michelle came across so brilliantly. I dropped the Thunderbirds a line, and they were absolutely delighted. And the interview you're about to hear is the result of that, with Michelle in a sweltering Las Vegas and me watching the rain out of the window in Birmingham. Major Michelle Curran, Mace, welcome to Extended. Thank you so much for joining us from Las Vegas.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to talk to you today.
How's things over there at the moment?
Good. You know, 2020, it's been a strange year so far, and it continues to be, but we're working through it. It's getting really hot here, so that's a little bit of a downside of living in Las Vegas.
Well, I can tell you it's like 13 degrees centigrade and raining in the UK. So, yeah, I'll take Vegas probably, to be honest with you.
I don't know. It's going to be 107 Fahrenheit, obviously, this afternoon when we fly our practice. So in a flight suit and a G suit and a helmet, that's quite toasty.
Yeah, that's pretty warm. That's pretty warm. If we can, let's go back to the beginning. Your route to becoming a pilot and a fighter pilot and joining the US Air Force was not necessarily the most obvious path of people that we talked to. You weren't dragging your parents to air shows or flying before you could drive, from what I can work out. You just tell us a bit about how it all came about.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of just stumbled into it. That's, I mean, way too much of a simplification of it. But I always was a thrill seeker growing up. I wanted to travel. I, you know, was a achiever. I was a straight A student. I wanted to do hard things and do well at them. And I think that kind of drew me into seeking out a job in the military. And then I was, you know, talking to my parents in early high school, and they obviously knew those traits about me. And my dad really encouraged me to look into doing ROTC. Yeah. To kind of take me down that path and also to help pay for college. So I applied and I got a scholarship. And at that point, I, you know, had no firsthand experience in the military. I didn't grow up as a military brat. There was no family history of that service since my grandfather in World War II. So there had definitely it had been a while. And I got there and I really just kind of thrived in that environment and found out it was a really good fit. And from there, it was, again, those same traits that made me, you know, kind of competitive and want to chase after those hard goals is what drove me to seek out trying to get a pilot slot. And then once I did and went off to pilot training, I did well there as well and was able to track T-38s, which is like the fighter bomber track of pilot training here in the States. And then they were only giving out a couple fighters per class at the time. And that was what I really wanted to fly, something challenging, something fast, exciting. And I ended up being second in my class, and we got two fighters. So the guy that was first and then myself were the only two for our class of 25. And then it was off to the races from there. And that's like 8-9 years ago now. So time's flown by since then.
So I guess, you know, it doesn't have to be that conventional route, does there? There is a route in for a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life. And I think let's say at this point as well, you don't have to fly, do you? There's plenty that you can do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all of the different services in the Air Force especially is extremely diverse. We have, you know, almost every career field that you'd see on the civilian side represented on the military side. So there's a lot of cool jobs too that you wouldn't get on the civilian side that are pretty exciting outside of flying.
Yeah. Now listen, flying, we all know, and the world of fighters and fast jets is still a male dominated world. Did that present any particular challenges to you? Is there anything you're looking back now that you think about?
So I think I get asked this question a lot, and I think people imagine, you know, like sexism and discrimination from my peers or from my instructors and things like that. And luckily I didn't have any big instances of that really stick out in my mind. I know that was very prevalent when women first were allowed to fly fighters in the early 90s.
Yeah.
But luckily by the time I came in, that had mostly gone away. But it definitely was still a different experience for me being the only one most of the time. My pilot training class, I was the only woman in my class. Then I, you know, track selected F-16s, went off to training there, and there was one other woman in my class, and we're still really good friends. We actually ended up going off to our first combat squadron in Misawa, Japan together. Wow. And when we showed up there within, I think we showed up about 3 weeks apart, we were the only women in that fighter squad, and they hadn't had any in the recent history before we showed up. So it's a different experience, and people don't intentionally treat you different, but there's different challenges that you face for sure, and it's a little bit different dynamic. So it takes some self-reflection and some time to kind of gain confidence in that environment and figure out what you're going to stand your ground on, what, you know, how to fit in the culture, but not, you know, undermine the fact that you are a woman in that culture. So I wouldn't say difficult at first, but it was something I had to learn and kind of find my footing. But it definitely got easier the further I progressed in my career.
As you mentioned, you progressed through to your first operational posting in Misawa. You flew, I think it's 160 combat hours over Afghanistan. That presumably for anyone, any fighter pilot, is kind of the ultimate realization of your training.
Yeah, so I went over to the 13th Fighter Squadron in Misawa, Japan, and was there for 3 years, and I didn't actually deploy with them. My next assignment after that was in Fort Worth, Texas, with the SPADs, with the 457th, and I deployed with them to Afghanistan, and it, you know, was definitely something I wanted to do. You train constantly, and you know, spend a lot of time investing in making yourself better at tactics, and to never get to use those would be really disappointing. So it was definitely nice to brush off on those and actually go do the mission that we trained for so long.
My name is Beatrice, and I want to be an engineer, and I listen to Extended.
And you fly, let's just talk about the F-16 for a minute, Michelle, if we may. It's an iconic aircraft. I mean, it's going to be 50 years old in 2024, but which is extraordinary, but still a potent weapon and an impressive performer, isn't it? Really, it's still holding its own.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, the premier multi-role fighter is what you always hear when you hear people talk about the F-16. So it might be old right now, and it doesn't have all the bells and whistles that the fifth gen fighters that are coming out now have, but it's still very good at, you know, what it does, both air to air and air to ground. So it's really diverse.
Would you want to go to combat in anything else?
I mean, it'd be cool to, you know, fly the F-35 or the F-22, but I definitely love flying the Viper, and I'd happily go to combat again in it for sure.
So how did the Thunderbirds come about? I mean, there's only been 5 female Thunderbirds pilots.
Yeah, I'm the fifth.
So, you know, what led you to apply for that? I know that when we talk to a lot of the guys and the girls we've had who've joined something like the Red Arrows, it's something that they've kind of always thought they might want to do. As soon as you became a fighter pilot, do you start thinking, wouldn't mind joining the Thunderbirds?
So the thought definitely crossed my mind at different periods in my career, but it definitely wasn't something that when I first came into the career field, I was like, that's what I want to do. I actually thought it was pretty intimidating. I was like, I don't know if I fly formation well enough to, you know, apply to the team. Like, maybe I'm not that good at that. I don't know. It turns out none of us are really that good at it. That's why we have a ton of training once you join the team to become as good as you need to be. There is one funny memory that sticks out from when I was back in the B course, which is our F-16 training. So learning to fly the Viper, we came up initial. So, you know, fly over the runway in what we call fingertip, which is close formation in the combat side of the house. And apparently I was wide. And during the debrief, my instructor was like, you know, it's fine. Your formation was fine, but you're not going to be a Thunderbird. Like, you're just, that's not... you're a little bit loose, you're a little bit wide in, you know, your formation. And then he like paused and he's like, I mean, is that something you want to do? And I was like, I don't know, I'm like a lieutenant at this point, but it's just funny that like one thing sticks out in my mind.
I hope he was the first person you called when you got in.
It's funny, he obviously was just joking around, but it's still funny that one conversation kind of sticks with me now.
What's the application process like for you for getting into the Thunderbirds? Is it, I know over here a lot of the guys may try 2 or 3 times before they're successful, would that be a similar sort of story?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty common to try 2 times, sometimes 3 times. You apply, I think the hiring message comes out around the beginning of the year, and you have to put together a package. Mine ended up being about 50 pages long. It's all your check rides, your evaluations, letters of recommendation from your leadership, from people higher up than that, a statement about why you personally, want to be a Thunderbird. A photo of you in uniform, because that's obviously the image is important as well. So all these things come together. That goes off to the current team. We receive all these applicants' packages, and then we look through it and try to narrow it down, you know, to a smaller group that we bring out for interviews. And then they come out for a whole show weekend. So they usually show up on Friday. They, you know, get to know the current team members. They do interviews with the wing commander, with the squadron commander, and then that's narrowed down from there to an even smaller group. I think my finalist group was 6 people for 3 spots. And we came back for another show weekend and did that all again. And then, like, kind of the culmination of that is a panel interview with all the current officers on the team, all asking you questions. So that's, that was pretty intimidating.
Pretty nerve-wracking.
The 12v1. But after that, they really look at the whole person concept, not just how good of a pilot you are. Obviously, that is very important, but also if you can do the Thunderbird side of the job as far as the community relations and everything that goes with that.
So tell us a bit about that, because the flying is incredible, Michelle. The solos are brilliant. I know you're a big fan of vertical rolls, because I've read that on the internet, and you know the solos are brilliant, the formations are great, but the stuff you do on the ground is so important, but also it does look so rewarding and fulfilling as well. And I know we were talking just before we started recording, you know, you've been on the TV and done all this sort of stuff, but it looks like that's a huge part of the job, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the interactions with the kids are my favorite part. And you saw that if you saw the Kelly Clarkson episode.
Yeah.
I have so many moments I could talk about from just last year where I have a one-on-one interaction with kids of all different ages, both boys and girls.
Yeah.
And you can really see the excitement that they have in meeting you. And then, like, especially in little girls, sometimes the light bulb moment where they're like, their mom like drags them up there and they're like, look, there's a girl pilot. Don't you see? And they're just like, done. Like, maybe that's something I could do someday. And that's why I applied to the team. It wasn't because I wanted to fly super close formation for extended periods of time. So that part's awesome. And like hospital visits, school visits, getting the opportunity to stand up in front of, you know, an auditorium full of high schoolers and grab their attention, get them to stop checking their phones and actually listen to what you have to say. And then the questions that I love the Q&A portion, because it's just super interesting to see, you know, what they're thinking about at that point in their life and things they're worried about and, you know, what you can give them as far as advice from there.
So what advice would you give? Yeah, we can go back. I think, was it Jeannie Livett paved the way? She was the first female fighter pilot in the US Air Force. And, you know, it is increasing. We don't need to just talk about girls here, but when you get that little boy or the little girl who comes up to you and says, well, the quote from the Kelly Clarkson thing was brilliant, I want your job. I mean, I'm sure they're not all as forward as that. But if somebody said to you, you know, Michelle, what do I have to do? What do I have to be to try and achieve the same sort of goals as you? What sort of advice would you give somebody?
Yeah, so I kind of hinted on what I was like as a kid a little bit. Like, I pursued, you know, difficult things. I pursued good grades. I pursued, you know, difficult physical endeavors.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm into mountaineering, which is just walking uphill forever. And it sucks, but I love it. But I really encourage people to get outside their comfort zone. And that sounds super cliche, but I can look back on my career and think of times when I knew I had an opportunity to chase after something, yeah. Whether that was when I was in ROTC and I'm like a freshman and I am brand new to this whole military lifestyle. And they're like, who in here is trying to be a pilot? Do I raise my hand at that point, or do I wait and see what happens? Or what? Who in here wants to fly a fighter jet someday? Do I want to raise my hand and, like, you know, single myself out right away among my peers who I'm going to be with for the next 4 years?
Yeah.
That I'm the competition for that. And then there's other instances later in my career where the Air Force was looking for volunteers to go instruct in Poland for 3 months one summer. And I was a brand new instructor and I knew that they didn't have any women flying their F-16s.
Yeah.
That was intimidating, but I was like, I want to go do that. That would be amazing. And I went and it was challenging, but it was one of the best experiences of my career.
And those Polish Vipers are incredible as well.
Oh, yeah, they are, for sure. They're so shiny.
Sorry to interrupt.
New jet smell, for sure.
Yeah.
But there's just been so many instances like that, and it's easy to lose perspective on that when you're in high school and you're worried about, you know, are my clothes going to get made fun of by the cool kids today? But I just challenge those kids to, you know, step outside their comfort zone and pursue something that other people don't think they can do.
Yeah.
And to go do something hard, you know, whether that's taking a AP class and trying to get a 4.0 and something really chemistry or whatever it is, or, you know, it's going out for a sports team and working to be your best at that or whatever it is. And those goals will change throughout your life. But that mentality in general just really sets you up to be successful.
Where do you go from the Thunderbirds, though? I mean, is this the pinnacle? You still have ambitions with your flying career?
I need to figure that out. I definitely need to do some self-reflecting. You know, when you're in the midst of the team, it's the most amazing experiences you get to have in your career, I think. And it can also be some of the toughest as far as just exhausting.
Yeah.
Right now, it's a little bit different because we're getting a lot more downtime and time at home with our families than you would ever have probably in your career in general, much less on the team.
Yeah.
So that's been a little bit of a recharge for us. But everyone's like, don't make too abrupt of a decision, like while you're in the midst of a show season and you're tired and you're like, you know, I want to leave the Air Force or I want to do this. Like, you need to take a step back and reflect on it. And I think, I'm not sure how much this has been discussed yet, but our team is being frozen because of COVID. So yeah. I will be around for next year as well.
Fantastic.
As the lead solo.
Excellent. So, that's great to hear.
Yeah. I have basically, you know, a year and a half to 2 years before I will leave the team after I train up my replacement in, you know, early 2022.
Yeah.
So I have a decent amount of time to think about it.
More vertical roles to come then.
Quite a few more vertical roles.
No, listen, I'm going to put, before we finish, because I don't want to, I know you've got a training flight to go to this afternoon. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'm going to put you slightly on the spot here. Our 100th episode included an interview with Flight Lieutenant John Bond, who's actually synchro lead in the Red Arrows, who obviously, you know, came to America last year and toured. What do you make of them?
I think their demo is pretty impressive. It's obviously a different aircraft, right? Yeah. Like the F-16 is super loud, super fast, with the afterburner and everything. But there's so many of them and colored smoke, and we did the joint flyby pass.
They were fantastic, weren't they?
It was awesome. I really enjoy their show, the Snowbird show, just because they're so different than ours. And I think having so many aircraft, for me, I'm just like, there's so many of them. I can't even keep track of who's who. I think they bring, you know, slightly different display than what we bring. And I think there's pros and cons to both, but I definitely have nothing negative to say about the Red Arrows.
Hey, I wasn't trying to catch her out. But listen, Michelle, thank you so much for your time. It is greatly appreciated. You are a massive inspiration, and you will continue to be now for another 18 months or so, or however long. So listen, I hope the training goes well for the rest of the season. I hope you get a show or two in. You never know, depending on how things work out. But if not, I'm sure next year, fingers crossed, things will be a return to normality, maybe. Mace, thank you so much. I do really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a blast to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
What an amazing woman, Gareth. She talks a lot about commitment and dedication and hard work. We hear that a lot from people in the industry. But I think she really demonstrates it. It really comes through with her, but in such a calm and collected way. It's quite interesting comparing her to Bondi. You know, the last two shows, two display pilots, how calm are they? And how amazing are they at achieving their personal goals?
Yeah, there are so many similarities, and I guess you would expect that. Bondi and Mace are both fighter pilots. But I think one of the things that really intrigued me about her that I picked up before I spoke to her, and as you'll have heard, we talked about, was her route to getting into becoming a fighter pilot. I don't know what the percentage is, but most of the people we interview on the show, a lot of them have had a very similar route to becoming, you know, into a career in aviation, you know, through their family or, you know, going to air shows growing up and everything. And that wasn't her at all. So I found that very interesting and, yeah, very determined. But yeah, you're right. Very, very calm, very level-headed, a great talker. And we probably could have carried on chatting, to tell you the truth.
One question that she sort of touched on very briefly, but I don't know if she expanded on either before or after the interview, was her active service in, was it Afghanistan?
Yes, it was. It was, yeah.
Did she mention anything about the role or anything she did over there?
I mean, not too much more than we touched upon in the interview, really. I mean, it was about 160 hours worth, and that would have been the F-16, as she said, is an incredible multi-role aircraft. So that would have been providing, you know, top cover, but, you know, protecting troops on the ground as well. And I don't want to speculate to what she did, but I'm pretty sure that's the sort of role that she would have been fulfilling when they were out there.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Look out for her. What a great role model.
What a role model for recruitment and, kind of, yeah, I suppose breaking the glass ceiling, breaking the hood glass ceiling. she's a real life Captain Marvel. You know, we had the there was a big USAF recruiting campaign about, the Captain Marvel, the film and everything around that, and, you know, sort of female fighter pilots. And, you know, she's there. She's walk the walk, talk the talk, you know, in there as a public, you know, one of the public faces of the USAF, doing these flyovers that are kind of, been sort of raising morale across the USAF. So, I think what would be good though is when we get to the stage where, you know, a female fighter pilot isn't a novelty or isn't a female airline pilot, you know, just isn't commented on or isn't sort of seen as a novelty. Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah. But you know what? When I listen to her talk, to be quite frank, I don't think of the gender. She could succeed pretty much in anything.
Yeah.
She's got real drive, real passion, but such dedication as well, and put in the hard work. She's going to achieve it at anything, really, isn't she? So great role model.
And I thought one of the most interesting things she said was that you don't join the Thunderbirds because you just want to fly around in close formation every day. Mm. You have to want to do the stuff on the ground and use it to inspire as well. And she clearly, the flying goes without saying, but she clearly revels and excels in that part of the job as well. And don't take my word for it or the interview for it. Once you've finished listening to this, click on the link in the show notes and just watch that YouTube video from the Kelly Clarkson show, because that will tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah. That's part of the Reds selection as well, isn't it? Of putting the girls in a room and a cocktail party sort of situation, and sort of saying, can you talk to kings and queens, and can you kind of talk to kids as well? You know,
yeah.
What are your kind of, I suppose, sort of social manners, would you call it?
Yeah.
Yeah, social etiquette, and just the whole capability to engage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some people have got it and can do it quite naturally, and others can't. And it just seems like, you know, the Red Arrows, Thunderbirds, I'm sure the Blue Angels, Snowbirds, look for that as much as they look for some of the flying skills.
Yeah, I think the flying is probably almost taken as a given. To some extent, as she said, you find out when you join that actually none of you are very good at doing what the Thunderbirds do, which is why they train so much. So it's all the other stuff that's that's what they're looking for, no doubt.
G'day, I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's only regular aviation podcast series. The Wings Over New Zealand show covers all sorts of aviation topics, with a New Zealand flavour but an international appeal. From interviews with veterans and aviation personalities, to topics like military aviation, warbirds, air shows, historians, authors, museums, aviation events, and much, much more. We have an extensive archive of episodes that you can go back to, and there are new episodes coming out all the time. Search for the Wings Over New Zealand show. Oh, and by the way, we love Extended. It's a great show. Well done, guys.
Europe's premier aerospace radio station, and you are listening to Extended.
Okay, we'd like to thank White Hearts and Peter Dixon for their contributions to the show. We'd also like to thank Mick Oakey and the team at the Aviation Historian for helping to promote the programme. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, and please do ask before using anything you hear. The programme's produced with a Creative Commons licence. So where can we find you online, Tim?
At Aureus Timor, and you can find the Royal Aeronautical Society at aerosociety.com.
And Gareth, where can we find you online?
Yeah, it's Gareth_Stringer on Twitter and globalaviationresource.com.
You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter and at xtpmedia.co.uk. And that's it with the arrival of the music. It's goodbye from Tim Robinson.
Goodbye, see you next time.
And it's goodbye from Gareth Stringer.
Goodbye, thanks for listening, and huge thanks to Michelle Curran and the United States Air Force. Thank you.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
The cockpit's very cramped, you've got leg restraints on, you're sat on a seat that's got explosives in it.
Just taking me on the trip of a lifetime in a F-18F Super Hornet.
Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
Tape video. Starmir looking like a right twit with a big X behind
him. Because he's usually naked when he's on Zoom call.
How did you guess? Who needs pants these days?
Exactly. Lockdown pants.
Tim, did you want to ask any questions? I left a big gap.
Extend it.
This is XTP Media.